Hi, I'm Sean L. McCarthy, founding editor of The Comics Comic, found wherever you can type The Comics Comic into your electronic devices. Welcome to Last Things First, the show that asks comedians about the historic lasts and firsts in their lives as their comedy careers have blossomed, from young people's dreams to adult people living those dreams, or still dreaming. Questions both big and small are asked and answered. It's hopefully both amusing and illuminating. Dave Merheji is an award-winning Canadian stand-up comedian and actor who co-starred in the Hulu series Rami and recently co-starred on the big screen opposite Daisy Ridley in the film Sometimes I Think About Dying, which premiered at the 2023 Sundance Film Festival and is available now to buy or stream. As a stand-up, Dave won the Just for Laughs 2011 Homegrown Comic Competition, made it to the finals of the 2013 Seattle International Comedy Competition, and won the Juno Award for Comedy Album of the Year in 2019 for his special Good Friend, Bad Grammar. He also had a special included in Netflix Comedians of the World Showcase. Dave joined me over Zoom for a wide-ranging conversation that touched upon forming friendships with other comedians in a competitive industry, which not only helped him land a role on Jerry D's Mr. D, but also Rami Youssef's Rami. How it feels to see his friend succeed, what it means to make specials their shows just for his native Canadian audience, and what it meant to include his family in his Crave special, I Love You, Habibi. We also dished on some of his earliest gigs, which included a regular on-air presence on MTV, and landing his first TV credit in Australia years before he ever ventured down under. There's a lot to get to, so let's get to it! Dave Mahesh, last things first. I want to talk a lot about you, but let me get this out of the way first. What was it like seeing your buddy Rami host Saturday Night Live?
Oh, it was super special. I was there. I spoke to him today. It was like excellent. It was so many emotions and words, you know what I mean? Proud, inspired. He's just like, you know, he smashed it. He was thoughtful. He said important things that needed to be said, I believe, and he did it in like an articulate, smart way. Yeah, it was brilliant.
I mean, you, even though you weren't on stage, and I don't know if you even contributed to any of the sketches or not, but
no.
But you also have to feel like there's this massive. Well, you tell me, what kind of pressure is there on you now in 2024 versus even a decade ago to be a representative for your community, whether it's Lebanese or the Middle East or...
Or a Canadian, you know.
Or Canadian, yeah.
I got it. I mean it, but all to go back to that too, it's like family, you know, like, you know, I flew down there. I flew to New York to, you know, to show my support because, you know, his family. But like, you know, I think it was always important. You know, I always had like I always felt like I didn't belong to either side sometimes. I had like my insecurities. I had like imposter syndrome. You know, I felt like maybe I'm not the right person to represent. So it was like a lot of emotions, you know, over time that I would deal with. But like, if I could say, you know, if I can say my piece and in my own way or give insight how I can, from my experience, then mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's much needed always if you have the chance to speak up and talk and represent in a way that, you know, that you want to move the culture forward or in an honest way, in your honest way, however that is. I don't know right. How it's different for person.
Right, because I mean, you know, both of your co-stars, you know, Rami Youssef with his show and then also, you know, Mo with his yeah. Netflix show have been trying to like, even before the events of the last 6 months, have been like trying to move the needle on getting not just Americans, but people around the world to understand that there's these different lived experiences.
And it's human too. I think a lot of times this is humans. Like we this is humanity. We should be aware of just treating ourselves better and having empathy and treating ourselves with much, much more care. Much more care. We're not, or you know, out from everything. I don't think we're being as nice as we can to each other, or as kind or empathetic. I think that you know, I'm not saying everyone, but I feel it's like it seems like, yeah, just have empathy. You know, it shouldn't be that hard. It shouldn't. Paula, you know, whatever aside is like how, you know, you should want to treat someone the best possible way and care.
Yeah, that's actually I don't. That's actually the kind of the message of the new film that you're in with Daisy Ridley. Sometimes I Think About Dying, which I just watched on Amazon yesterday. It's a great movie. It's I guess I would call it a rom anti-com. It's not quite a
I haven't heard that
rom-com.
one. Yeah, it's I get I
But you're the lead in it opposite Daisy.
that's pretty surreal, man. Pretty surreal, pretty surreal. It was
Yeah.
I think about can it you know how what it struck with me was about human connection. Just like
Right.
that difficulty sometimes and that not nuance, but like, you know, these interactions that you know, you may overlook from time from day to day, but like it is hard. Like as much as I like being outgoing and as much as I'm a stand-up comic and I, you know, I can be out, I can be, you know, cheery or whatever. There are other times where it is difficult to have interaction or to communicate your emotions or not. Or, you know, sometimes you just want to live in a space where it's like, I don't want to be around anyone. I want to live inside of me. So I thought it did a great job of showing that and showing how difficult it is. And the romance part of it is this character trying to connect with this person who may not want to like be as open as they are, you know? So yeah. And having that patience with people and having that kind of like, you know, you see the office workers like, you know, are you asking questions? Are you trying to involve everyone? Are you taking the time to see if someone's all right? Or, you know, you wait 7 months and you don't check in on people. So I think it captured that very well.
Yeah. What is more amazing to you in retrospect? The idea that you get to see Rami hosting SNL or at the Oscars, or that you're on the big screen opposite the new Star Wars movies.
Like what? In what sense? Like
In terms of like the you who maybe 15 or 20 years ago was just starting out doing comedy in Windsor and Detroit and Toronto.
yeah. Like what's more surreal or like
Yeah. What would
I
surprise
guess.
the young Dave more?
I mean, I think I mean, just speaking for me, I'm like seeing me on like when I saw it in the movie theater, I was like, holy shit. Oh, it's crazy. Like, it's like, you know, you say sometimes you always, you know, you'll say like, you'll manifest things. You'll be like, oh, I know I'm going to get to this point, but it's still, I think, surreal when you get there, whether your intention was like, I knew I was going to get there. Oh, I just think it's still, even till this day, when I think about it, every time I'm like, wow, I went from like Windsor, Toronto, America, basically got a green card. I went from open mics to a movie screen with one of the best actors. And then even watching Rami, it's like surreal as well because you're watching like, you know, somebody you've known for a long time, you know, achieve these magnificent things like the Oscars and SNL and his show and then the continued success he has. So I think, again, I say like, I think we celebrate each other, you know, like I celebrate him, you know, Mo, everyone. I celebrate every single person on the cast, like, you know, from May, who's in Moon Knight, who's doing films, to Lath, who's doing films, who plays the uncle, Hyam, like everybody, Steve, like, everybody on that cast. Amr, you know what I mean? The folk who plays the father, like, it's just that I think it is like, you know, I don't know if that answered the question, but it is like you're proud of them. It's surreal, but you kind of like, you know, that their skill set is so amazing that when you see it, you're like, yeah, I could see that. You know what I'm saying? I think, you know,
Yeah.
I could see that.
Your most recent special, stand-up special, I Love You, Habibi,
Two things strike me about that. One is you include your parents or your parents and your brothers and sisters in interstitials, which is it's a courageous thing to do because you don't know what they're gonna do or say, and then you might have to cut them out and then have to tell them that you cut them out of it. Did your siblings and your parents, did they allow you to like have these kinds of dreams when you were first pursuing comedy in the beginning?
100%. They were like very, very supportive. Like my mom was like, I want you. My mom's only thing was that I go to college and graduate. That was her only thing. She's like,
Okay.
you can pursue your dream, but like, can you go to college? And I did, and I'm thankful. At first, I was kind of like, oh man, I just want to do comedy and acting, but I'm glad I did. I'm glad I graduated from St. Clair College in Windsor, Ontario, because it taught me discipline and the relationships that I made that I'm still friends with these individuals.
Oh, and
So
you chose a local college. You didn't choose to go, knowing that you wanted to do comedy, you didn't choose to go to Humber, where they actually have comedy as a curriculum.
I actually didn't even know till I got to Toronto that that
Oh,
was a
wow.
thing. Yeah, I don't think I was aware at the time. And Middle Eastern, your mom, she wants you close to home. So she stresses you about going other places. So I think I wanted to be close to home. And I'm glad, I got they gave me the support. I lived with them, my parents. They helped cover the tuition. They provided me the via car to get to school. School and it was and but they always come to shows. My family comes to, if I'm doing a show in Windsor and or Detroit, they'll come in like groups. So they're always, it doesn't, they don't stunt me. They're like supportive of my material. They'll like allow, that's why they were so cool and they jumped on that special. That's why I in the back of my mind I knew they were gonna, it was not gonna be, they understood what was gonna happen. I told them that this is going to go out on a streaming service. They were cool with it, and they came and they really brought it. They were open to do whatever or say whatever they needed to say, and it was very, I thought it was very special.
Yeah,
And I
no matter
wanted,
how embarrassing it might look for your dad.
yeah. And he didn't care. I mean, he told everyone that he like watches porn when he was young, when we were younger. So I mean, that's how fun they are as a family and how much we love each other as a family, that they're willing to like do that and maybe sacrifice, their vulnerabilities. It worked out. I just wanted to, I was inspired by watching, was it Jenny Slate? I remember someone, I mean, that might not be right, but I remember someone had documented their grandmother in a comedy special, and then Gerard Carmichael's home videos from HBO was an inspiration there. I think that's what it was called. Yeah, I just wanted to try something different, and I wanted them to answer. I always talk about them, so why don't they get to answer?
Give them
They get to answer the jokes.
a chance. Growing up in Windsor, did you that's a you know, it's essentially a border town. It's right across the river from Detroit. So when you were first starting out, did you think of yourself as strictly a Canadian comedian, or how much of the American influence from just across the river was there in your comedy starting out?
I think we all like, I think if you ask, people from Windsor, they do have an American influence. We're so close. It's not like the border, there's a tunnel and a bridge, right, on either side of the city. So the tunnel from my parents' place growing up to get through the tunnel and then downtown Detroit was only like 15, 20 minutes. Like, you know what I'm saying? Just to give you how like close it is. So their influence there, so there was a large, large influence, an American influence. But I do feel 100% Canadian, but you had those influences because you're always crossing and going back. They're coming over, we're coming over. It's like not as far as I think Americans. I think sometimes Americans think you got to go like 7 more hours or whatever, how many hours. It's like literally we do fireworks and watch each other's fireworks, I think.
Right. So was it easier to, in the very beginning, was it easier to go to open mics in Detroit or Windsor?
No, because it was after 9/11. So the security was like, and they don't want you over there because they think they don't, the border guards don't understand that open mics are for free, right? So in their heads, they're like, you're getting paid.
Oh, right.
So
And then
they
you have to
approve,
fill
right? You're
out more
like, hey,
paperwork.
yeah, I had to bring like pay stubs, Well, at one point it got so bad that they were like, "Do you pay bills?" I go, "No, I live with my mom." And then another custom person next to that one leaned out and said, "Man, you don't pay your own bills? It's like you a grown up," or I think he was like, "You're 27 or 20, whatever, 26." And I had to get a letter from my mom saying that my son lives with me and doesn't pay bills, to just, to constantly try to get across. So it wasn't as easy, but like I think before I moved to Toronto, I was going out there at least every night, man, for a year, probably at least like 5 times a week. I was hitting like shows over there, like open mics.
Who is tougher, the American customs or the Canadian customs?
Oh, American. Canadian ones. I mean, well, a couple times we got like, Canadian ones were tough, but I would say majority of the times it was American customs that were
Okay.
tough.
Tell me about your experience with MTV Live, because
Man, these are good questions. I
I don't think
love them.
American listeners really know. We know
Oh.
TRL Live with Carson Daly, but we don't know MTV Live out of Toronto.
Yeah, it was out of Toronto. MTV Live was wild because it was on for like 8 years, but we knew it in the city. I never thought I would be on MTV Live. It was like I had done something for the Comedy Channel, and I think somebody working at MTV Live worked on that, or one of the producers worked on that thing, and they were doing a mass audition, and they had Facebook messaged me in the DMs, and they're like, "Do you want to audition?" And I was like, "What? For what?" I knew the format, but I just didn't know. And then I went through this audition process. They were looking for a new host because Darren Jones had, I think he was going somewhere else. So they were looking for a new like a host. But eventually it became Paul, who was already on the show, Paul Lemieux. Because I had done like the auditions, and I became a cast member. So it was like Sheena, Nicole, Paul, and myself. Nicole and Paul were at the front, and we were at the sides, me and Sheena, and we would like throw the sketches, we do live stuff. It was fun, but to be honest with you, I had imposter syndrome there. I was having a hard time, like, because I didn't know the security of the job I had. So I think that kind of sometimes hindered the fun that I was having. But overall, it taught me, how to do, to do sketches and come up with ideas, because you had to pitch ideas in the morning or during the afternoon to make it to tape to the show. So it taught me, and it was like fun, man. You were wearing shorts and wearing Van shoes. It was like cool. It felt like, oh man, how crazy it is I get to work on. I mean, I grew up watching MTV, I mean, in the US, and not as regularly in Canada, but like to be a part of this show, and I'm still like, friends with some of the people.
Were you already keeping up with pop culture and celebrities and musicians at that time, or did that force you to pay a lot more attention?
No, musicians, I was, if because in hip hop and rap, I was always paying attention. I remember, they said one morning that Kendrick Lamar was the musical guest. This was when Section 80 came out, and I kind of went, I was like, oh, like I was pumped. And the sound guy, he brought me up during the rehearsals to watch Kendrick rehearse. He knew I liked him as an artist, so I wasn't mad into. Up to date with the pop culture, but musically, like I remember when Macklemore, they were break the heist. I remember like being aware of like musicians at least.
Okay. Reading your bio, it strikes me, I'm speaking to you thanks to technology. I'm in Melbourne, Australia at the Melbourne Festival, and you're in Canada
No, I'm in Los
or
Angeles.
in oh, you're in
Los
LA.
Angeles.
Okay. But I bring up Australia because your bio says your very first comedy special was an Australian special.
Oh, what happened was it was a show called We Ain't Terrorists that I would do with like comics in Toronto and in Canada, and we I, for years it was like I wanted to do something that was kind of like, not poking fun, but like, you call us that, or you say we're that. Why don't I just do a show where it just calls it out, and then you come and you see that we're just normal people. So I was doing the show, and then we had shot it in Toronto. Like we had the company, a Tricon. It was Tricon, shot the special for us. It was me and Ali Rizvi. We like co-headlined, and then they had sold it later on to a Australian network, ABC2, I believe. It's
okay.
That's how that happened. That was a thing where I was touring around and doing in Toronto, and then that Tricon found saw us, and they were like, "We're going to produce this as a special." And then later they sold it.
What do you suppose it says that Australia was first to jump on board?
I mean, I would get messages back then from Australians watching it, and I never went until like 2014 or so. The special was like 2008, so it was pretty surreal.
So when you first finally made it down under in 2014, did people know who you were because they had seen you on TV?
I mean, very randomly, maybe like one or two people, I think. I can't remember. I remember doing, because I did the headliner show that I think that's happening still in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, I came back and did the Sydney Comedy Store
Okay.
for 2 weeks in 2016, I want to say.
Yeah, this year the headliner show is Joel Kim Booster and Zainab.
Yeah, Zainab. I know Zainab. Very, very
Yeah.
funny.
Yeah, one of the things about, trying to document comedy as a journalist or as an outsider, I've been trying over the past couple of years to really get a handle on how big stand-up comedy has become. And what I found out quickly, and I'm still finding out, is that it really depends on where in the world you are. Like in Australia, I can't watch a bunch of American YouTube specials.
Oh, really?
They don't even show up in the search.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So knowing that, I have to think, well, if I'm in America, how many comedy specials are out there that Americans have no idea about?
Yeah.
I only know about Crave because I've gone to Just for Laughs enough times to know that Crave is a thing in Canada. But that's
Yeah,
where
that's what I have to tell people.
Yeah. So
so then people are like, oh, I'm like, yeah. I mean, because I always wanted to do, me personally, I always wanted to do a special in Canada, like with a network. And that's something that drew me to it originally. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like I had the material. I was like, oh, maybe I wait and I try to pitch it somewhere else. But I was like, no, I want to do a Canadian special.
Right. So what? But I mean, what is Crave? To my American audience, what is Crave?
Well, it's like a streaming
Canadian
service.
Comedy Central. It's Canadian
It's
HBO.
like Canadian.
It's Canadian.
Netflix. It'll be like Canadian Netflix. Like Letterkenny's on there, and then there's other Canadian specials that are on there, and then they'll get like stuff from HBO. So it is basically a Canadian Netflix. Because it's the streaming service. It's not like Comedy Central. I don't think Comedy Central is a streaming service, but
No.
it is our version of Netflix, basically.
Right.
And there is a Netflix Canada, but Crave is its own thing, and it's just streaming like TV shows, documentaries, stand-up specials, and Canadian specials and American specials. But it gave an opportunity to people like me. I think Sophie Buttle has one. Kate Trevor. Wait, this Kate Trevor? He might have one. Chris Robinson, Chris Locke. There's like Graham Kay, Robbie Hoffman. There's many people have from Canada have gotten that opportunity to film their specials and stream in Canada.
What does it mean to be on Crave? How significant is it?
I mean, I it's going to be different for every Canadian comic to say that, but for me, I was like, this is my country. People in like you know people in my country could see it, and it's like it's good for us. It's good for representation, right? It's like if you're a Canadian comic and you're frustrated with like the lack of representation in our own country, then this is helpful. Now we have our specials up. Now people in Canada all over don't have to like always go to America to try to get those specials. We're here, so that's why I wanted to do it as well as part of it to be like. Yeah, I moved away from Canada and I'm trying to achieve things in America, but no, I want to do a Canadian TV show. I want to do a Canadian special because I am Canadian.
Yeah, and you have the Juno Award to prove it.
Yes.
I mean, I ask some of these questions in jest, but I also ask because It's so hard to know, like I just referenced earlier, it's so hard to know exactly what means anything in comedy now. When I was, I'm 52. I don't know how old you are. I'm 52.
Forty-three.
Okay. So this might be as true for you as it was for me. You know, growing up, it meant a big deal if you got the Tonight Show. It meant a big deal if you got on David Letterman. It meant a big deal if you had an HBO special. And then if you had a half hour or an hour on Comedy Central, that also meant a big deal. Anything else was kind of, there wasn't anything else. Now it's like, who knows what means anything?
Yeah, and that's such a, you know, you bring up a good point because that's the conversation we have all the time. Probably more times than we thought we would be having at this period in my life, in a sense, because but I and it's you know, there's comic friends of mine that will say what you just said. They're like, well, what's the purpose of this? What's the meaning of this? It doesn't mean anything. I go, yeah, I mean, current like statistically or landscape the what the landscape is now, yeah, that probably maybe not mean it as much as it did mean back then. But I think you got to look at it for you, because you're the one that did it. Do you know what I'm
Right.
saying? Some part of you went and agreed to do it. So if the Tonight Show came to you and you said yeah, so that there is some meaning there if you said yes. Because if you didn't really feel there was a meaning, you'd be like, "Well, I'm not doing this." Do you understand? So people will always be like, "Oh, that shit don't mean nothing." I go, "Well, I mean, it's still there, and people are still doing it, so it must mean something. It may not
Right.
mean like." As much now, but it still means something because it still exists. Why the fuck would you still be doing it?
Right.
Why would you do the Tonight Show and then go, hey man, this don't mean shit? I go, why would you put all that work in?
The question becomes like, what were the milestones or the goalposts for you growing up in Windsor and then in doing comedy in Toronto when you were young? What were those goalposts for you that you felt like you had to achieve to go, okay, I've made it as a comedian? Did you have?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, I grew up with like watching people like Chris Tucker, Martin Lawrence, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, Carlin, and like I always wanted it to be in a movie. Like I didn't know it was going to be a drama more so. I thought it would be like comedic the first one because I never. But I always was like, yo, if I can do stand up, find my voice, and then get into TV and film, then yeah, I did it. To me, I did it. I did the thing you're supposed to do. The thing I wanted to do, sorry, was that, with the help of, you know, I go back to say is like, you know, watching Rami at the Oscars and SNL and then watching him in Poor Things in his own shows was truly inspiring. You know, like to even go back to that question is like, I think all of it is inspiring. Like I like, you know, but he, you know, I did his, he got me on his, sh like I, did his show. I auditioned for it. And, you know, and then the director from Sometimes I Think About Dying, Rachel Amber and Alex Sachs, she's the producer. They saw me in Rami. That's how I got the role. So it's like, so when I watch this person, I'm like, you know, it's family to me. Do you know what I mean? And a giant inspiration. So I don't think those two, like, I don't really put them because they're different feelings. You know, my feeling of being in a movie screen is different because that's coming from me. Like I got a kid from Windsor did stand up is there, but watching your boy is like a is another a feeling of like wow, like this super talented person got to the highest heights you can get. And you know, and is still, you know, and still going. And it's truly, truly inspiring. I was when I was there in the building. I'm like, this is, yeah. Even when I look at him and talk to him, I'm like, yo, man, you did it, bro. So.
Yeah, and sometimes it's, you know, when you're looking at your own life or your own career, it's hard to see how the pieces fit together until much later, right? Like you said, you wanted to be in a movie, and now you are in a big movie with big people, but to get there, you had to go through these other steps, like doing Rami. But before doing Rami, you were on this Canadian sitcom, Mr. D. Like
Sorry. Yeah.
you went from Rush Hour, but on a sitcom to like slowly getting like bigger but more dramatic. It
Yeah,
wasn't the path you thought it was going to be.
No, it wasn't, but I mean, I was always intrigued by like Denzel Washington and like Leonardo DiCaprio and how they tackle these dramatic roles. I always wanted to do that as well. I guess I just thought comedy was the way to get in first. I just really had no knowledge. But even that, Mr. D, I came in the last 2 seasons, 7 and 8, as a guest role. But Jerry, I asked Jerry. And he let me open in Windsor. It was at the hockey arena. And then after the show, he's like, I have this idea for a new teacher. Do you want to audition? And this was then months later. So he gave me my first opportunity, which I owe him so much, to be in a sitcom because I've never been in a sitcom. So I got to learn a bunch of stuff before I did Rami. So it
Right.
was like, I and Jerry D, the whole cast, but Jerry D is one of the funniest people in a scene, to really be in too. He's so funny, man. It's like, I mean, I don't, I, yeah, I was having a hard time like keeping composure, but like he gave me that opportunity, which I'm very grateful for.
So I guess, one of the lessons of that is like, always be friendly to your fellow comedians on the way up because you never know which ones of them are going to pop and which ones of them are going to be able to help you up the ladder.
I mean, you should just generally be, I remember one time long in Michigan, Mike Bobbitt, we were in Ann Arbor. Mike Bobbitt's a very funny comic friend of mine. We were sitting there. This comic had come on stage and I'm like, man, you do one of those. I was young. And he goes, what? I go, I ain't trying to watch. He goes, man, you don't know where that person's going to end up. So you just can't be out here like, just being rude and, like. You tend to, I think it goes back to just trying to find a way to be empathetic to each other, in the comedy scene. Because not only just not for the purpose of somebody helping you down the road, but just why not? Like why should we create a negative space for us? We're all trying to do the same shit. We're all trying to make people laugh and aspire and try to make our dreams. So why make it harder for ourselves if we're just gonna battle each other? It's something I constantly try to work at. I'm like, why? I want to try to like be that person where I'm like, I don't want conflict. I don't want that
Right.
kind of energy. It's not easy. You know what I mean? It's not easy to attain, but I would like to.
Right. I think one of the things that made it more difficult, or one of the things that always makes it more difficult to be able to have maintain that sort of empathy or just connection with your fellows in the industry is when the industry itself places these exclusionary goalposts, like say new faces at Just for Laughs was one of those things where people felt they had to be a new face, and if they didn't get it, then F you to everybody who did because they didn't deserve it. And now it's not even a thing anymore.
That's what I mean, I did Homegrown in 2011. That's the Canadian version basically of it. And I remember it was like, it was a competition back then. It wasn't like new face. New faces is not a competition. New faces is just like you showcase. I remember Homegrown, and that year I won, but it's weird because you're competing with your boy and or like you're competing with a fellow comedians.
Right.
People you start in this. I met my boy in a sense. Like I remember, like I was close to one of the other competitors. Like we're hanging out all the time and now we're competing. Just like been
Yeah.
hanging out all year and a couple years. And now we're in a competition together. And I think that's, you're right. It does divide. It just it that those type of things divide people.
Yeah, because you also did the Seattle competition, right?
Yeah. And that
And
one was I'm
I was in Seattle in the late 90s, and back then there weren't all of these other opportunities, right? There was
Oh, that was the thing, right?
in the late 90s and into the early 2000s before social media, I guess, there was New Faces. There was J you could get JFL, you could
Yeah.
get Aspen, which was the HBO one,
I remember that.
or you could do one of two competitions. You could do the Seattle competition or the San Francisco competition.
Dude, I was jacked to go to Seattle to do that.
But those four things, those are all highly competitive. Those are things that like are designed to disconnect us from each other. And now, I mean, the Seattle and San Francisco competitions are still there, but it's like they get lost. Everything is just everything now.
I'll tell you this with Seattle. There was a, but like, you know, me and my friend Graham K, who I think Graham finished second, I want to say. Yeah, we weren't like as close before that competition. And now we're like homies. And Zoltan, who won the competition that year in 2013, we're still friends and good friends now. So I think it did bring, it did cause competitiveness, but it brought, you know, these two relationships that I hold dear to me now. But I remember I finished, I think, fourth. I remember the final five. I'm telling Graham K, I'm in the hallway where there's stages. I go, man, I can't do it, bro. I keep losing. I don't know what's happening. And he was like, I keep placing fourth or fifth. And he goes, no, buddy. And they're doing the announcements. He goes, no, buddy. You're good. You're good. Don't worry. And I think they were like, and Dave Marej, fifth or fourth. And I go, fuck. And you had to go. You have to go up. I was just crying in the back, like, bro, please, I don't want to be fourth or fifth. So it was like, as much as it was competitive, there was these memories that we collected.
Well, yeah, I mean, part of that is you have to spend 3 or 4 weeks,
4 weeks, yeah,
going traveling all over a state with the same group of comedians. So
We were sleeping on the floor sometimes. We were on couch on the floors. Me and Zoltan were side by side.
So maybe that's the secret in 2024 is to take those good things. Like, if it's going to be competitive, at least make all the comedians hang out together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Because we bonded so, like, me and Zoltan – there was one point where he woke up or I woke up. I go, why the fuck are we so cold? I remember we were like, and then we realized we were sitting or we were hot. We were just sitting next to where the heat or the cold was. We slept. There was something covering it. Kind of, we slept our heads to there, but like all we woke up in the morning, like, what the, are we going to get sick? Like, what the, and we had to compete like 7 hours later. Like, we were like, we don't have the right living conditions, but it brought us so close, man. It brought us so close. Like, I'm never going to forget that, those memories. So I think it was so special. You just don't forget. You just immediately remember. And to me, I knew of Seattle. I knew the weight and I knew the people that went through it and did it. So to me, when I got in, I was like, that was a big deal. It still is a big deal. I mean, I know now they might be lost in the shuffle, but to me, I'm like, yo, I did Seattle Comedy Competition in 2013 and I finished fourth. I did that. So it's like, it still holds dear.
And look at you now. Dave Marej, thank you for taking this time in this technology to try to connect with me for a half hour. So I really appreciate it. And I wish for more connections, not just with comedians, but everyone, because we need to connect more than ever. So
I want to say, man, you came super prepared and I yeah, that was great, man. I say that honestly. I was like, you were on point. You made it feel like, you know, you're super knowledgeable, and I really appreciate you taking your time. And you know, and it just seems like you did your research, and that's so great. And that means a lot. It means a lot.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, I mean it.
Say hi to LA for me.
I will.
This episode of The Comics Comic presents Last Things First was post-produced by Alex Brazell at Showbiz Studios. Theme music was by Camille Harris and Shockwave, logo by Giggle Chick. If you enjoyed listening, please check out my Substack called Piffany at piffany.substack.com for transcripts, bonus commentary, and expert analysis about comedy, show business, and more. I'm your host, Sean O. McCarthy. Thanks for listening!